podcast.
Welcome to We Know's Parenting. I'm Peter McNerney.
I'm Beth Newell.
Oh, we are parents. We're in love. We're married. We got children.
But first and foremost, we're in love.
The first
listeners, this is a love story.
We Know's Parenting, a love story. we've got kids. They're 3 and 4. Maven is 3. Brynn is 4. We stopped summarizing our lives.
What if we suddenly turned very like reality TV couple and we were just like, we're renewing our vows.
Guys, it's...
Join us on the live telecast of our vow renewal.
Should we just like act like we're huge influencers and like that's our life?
Yeah. We're like, here are our regular outfits for going out.
Who are we kidding? That's exactly what we do. Anyway, welcome. We're so glad you're here. So you can share in our failures and successes. Oh, Beth, it's been 2 weeks since we've really talked about it. So we had our vacation episode last week.
Okay.
And we got stuff to discuss.
Yeah, we took our kids on an airplane on a vacation. It was pretty successful.
I'd call it a slam dunk.
The worst part of the vacation was we got stuck in the airport for a few hours, and our kids actually were pretty happy the entire time.
This was a miracle. So it was a 13-hour travel day.
Yeah.
More than that if you count the hour and 45-minute drive from the lake.
Yeah. But we took our kids, we got on an airplane, we stayed on the tarmac for like an hour or something, and then they were like, actually, we're not leaving. And then we got back into the airport, and as we're pulling back, Maven was like, we're home now? And I was like, no, it's going to be
we're
so much longer.
So many hours. And then we stayed in the airport. They're like, check back in an hour. Check back in an hour. Everything was still grounded because of a storm. So we were there for 3.5 hours till we got back on the plane. And then we got there and our kids didn't really melt down ever.
Well, I just want to applaud myself because I really went into action and I said, we're getting food. We're getting toys.
And do you know what I said?
What?
So on the way there, I was like, oh, we're boarding now. So I picked up Brandon. I got to the front of the line and I essentially made you carry Maven hold Maven because she was screaming for like 15, 20 minutes. And it made you really tired. And we got in the plane.
Well, she wasn't screaming so much as you were like, we have to line up. And it was like, not time to line up yet. So then I had to hold Maven still instead of letting her run around, which is what she had been doing.
Right. And we got on the plane and you very calmly communicated to me how that was difficult for you. And I really appreciated how you told me.
When I'm holding a child in my arms, standing still for that long, it makes me feel like I might actually faint because I.
That's fair. Not everyone.
On occasion. And then the idea of fainting makes me very anxious. And then I get very angry.
So coming home, this was fresh in my mind. And I was in the mode of like, you know what? We're in no rush. We're fine. I don't need to push to have it my way. And I think all of us were prepped and relaxed and loose. And we handled that longest day at an airport I've had in a long, long time.
Yeah, we were both very calm.
We nailed it.
And I did communicate the fainting concern to you pretty calmly after I stood there for a very long time.
I was very appreciative as to how you communicated that to me. And as a result, I heard it and was able to implement it all the quicker. Because I wasn't busy being defensive.
Yeah.
I'm just saying thank you for helping me pass my own defenses.
It was a very good, easy vacation otherwise, which helped us not be stressed in those moments.
So we were at a lake.
We took our kids on a boat ride. I don't think they've been on a real boat ride. Like, not on that kind of boat.
It reminded me. So we were with Chuck Ryan, as we discussed. He gave us a lovely vacation.
You'll never
vacation.
Miss an excuse to name drop him.
He's the sweetest
man. Best friend, Chuck Bryant.
On the planet. And he invited us to this thing. He didn't have to. We had never really hung out, and boy, what a tremendous weekend it was.
He's usually busy hosting the Stuff You Should Know podcast. He's very successful.
Yeah, they record 24 hours a day.
He chose us to hang out with him.
Mm-hmm. And he took us on a boat, and it was great, but Brynn and Maven were in the back, and I suddenly remembered the few times I was like on a speedboat as a kid where you just go for a while and it should become, and they just curl up and fall asleep pretty quick.
I don't remember curling up and falling asleep on boats when I was a kid, but
I just had this flash of seeing Brynn curl up and like it was windy and he was a little bit over it. And I was like, oh my gosh, I remember this exact feeling.
It's funny because you and I have been on boats over the years, and when I am on a boat, my body immediately is so happy, and I love the movement, and I'm just like, yes, this is perfect. Like, and you get motion sick, and you don't really especially enjoy being on the boat.
That's fair. I don't get motion sick a lot. It's happened a couple of times.
Yeah, okay.
Every time I on vacation, my dad would go, let's go like deep sea fishing. And we take
deep
a boat.
Deep sea fishing.
We did this one in deep sea, like a fair ways away where it's choppier and we never caught anything,
okay,
and all of us would just throw up.
Deep sea fishing. Have you seen those shows? They get hit by 1,000-foot waves.
You're right. I will amend it. Compared to where we normally fish, it was deeper out into the sea. I don't know. That's what my dad called it when I was six. And all I did was throw up off the back of the boat, and we didn't catch anything.
Well, I just don't think you should appropriate the term deep sea fishing, which you appropriate
deep sea appropriation.
I think it's offensive to my fisherman family members.
To all those real Massachusetts fishermen. Anyway, so sorry. I didn't mean to offend anybody. So Brynn and Maven spent this whole weekend with Chuck's daughter, Ruby, who we've talked about. And they became best friends. And she's exactly in between the age of Maven and Brynn. And boy, was it a joy to watch this trio of adorable kids
so cute.
In a lake.
And when we got there, we slept at their house, and there was a little trundle bed under their daughter's bed, which Maven slept in, and they were calling it a sleepover.
They called it the underbed?
They called it the underbed, and they're like, but they kept referring to it as a sleepover, and they're like, we're having a sleepover. Are we having a sleepover tonight? Is this a sleepover? And like, then when Maven woke up in the morning and came out of the bedroom, she did like this little jig dance. Like, she was just so delighted to wake up there.
She's also exhausted and cranky because neither one of them slept.
Well, after that, but when she woke up in that bed, she was like, I'm having a sleepover. Like,
yeah. It was endlessly adorable. But we basically spent the whole weekend floating in a lake. It was in the 90s, and Brynn and Maven, we put on their, so, you know, last episode or before that, we talked about Brynn almost drowning in the pool. Throw on his floaties. Maven had her floaties. And boy, we were watching them. We were there, but it was not stressful.
Well, the first day was a tiny bit stressful because we got these floaties from Maven, and she had never used them before. And she was sort of trying to swim, but not really, because it was the first time, and she didn't really know. And she kept insisting on keeping her legs crossed because she was pretending to be a mermaid, which was not helping her learn to swim at all. And she kept insisting she was a mermaid for, like, hours.
I gotta say, she's pretty good by the end at swimming with her feet crossed.
By the next day, she was, like, really swimming and, like, very comfortable. And I was like, okay, that was just a phase.
Well, she kept going, I'm a mermaid. And then she'd go, poof. Oh, I'm a kid again.
Well,
and then she'd kick both legs.
It's just annoying because those floaties keep their head out of the water, but just barely. So it requires some effort from them to, like, be aware of the water. You know what I mean? Well, and she just kept rolling onto her side as a mermaid. And I was like, this is not.
That's how they're not going to drown. Let them swallow lake water and learn.
All in all, she learned pretty fast. The next day, she was like totally fine.
The other crazy thing was, so Brynn hasn't been swimming really since the last vacation where he would not put his head underwater. He was scared of that.
Oh, yeah. He was doing a lot of jumping in.
He gets to the lake and just dives in, goes under, comes up, and he's like, now I'm comfortable with this.
Yeah.
And I
does a very dramatic U move, which is that every time he comes up, he's like, And he's squinting his eyes, and you're like, are you okay? And it's just literally the exact same reaction he has every time he comes out of the water.
Well, yeah, it looks panicked. You're like, are you okay? And he's always like, yeah, why? I'm fine.
He just, him and you have such a dramatic flair for every action. It's like when Chuck handed you the binoculars to see something, and you laid down on the dock like you were a soldier at war scouting the enemy.
Okay, I will justify this. There was a giant thing floating in the water, and we were is that a log?
There's no justification for laying down.
Is that a log, or is that a dead beaver? And all of us tried to look through the binoculars, but we were on a boat. So we were bobbing. It was bobbing. We couldn't get a good look. So I jumped on the dock, lay down, and put my elbows down so that I was not moving at all.
You could just stand on the dock.
No, but that wasn't cool at all.
Yeah, what you did was much cooler,
it was
and that's
so
what
cool.
I liked about it.
I look like a sniper checking out that
ended up being
a piece of wood.
I was like, that's my husband the sniper. Look out, everybody.
I turned my hat backwards so I could look at it.
Anyway,
it was not
trip.
A dead beaver. It was a stump.
We still don't know.
I think Bryn being comfortable diving under the water, I think it's because I let him fall in the pool. He went under the water and he was like, oh, I'm fine. Now I'm fine going underwater.
You really fall upwards.
Nailed it. Other big thing that happened.
Can I say, Bryn said nailed it. Bryn's been saying nailed it a lot.
Well,
and last night, I wanted to cut his bangs because when we were swimming, they were going in his eyes a little bit. And so I trimmed them, and I was blowing hairs off his forehead, and he goes, you're blowing me away. And then he went to go look at his bang trim in the mirror, and he goes, nailed it.
Well, yeah, we went to Smashburger, which I'll talk about later, and he took a big bite of his burger, and he goes, Smashburger, nailed it. the other big things that happened this week is Maven had her very first dentist appointment.
Oh, yeah.
And it actually was not exciting at all. It was very fast and she nailed it. They have Netflix.
She nailed it.
She nailed it. They got Netflix at the dentist. Half the time is like discussing what they're going to put on the TV. And they put on the TV and then it's done 10 minutes later. But, oh, I don't know if I told you this. The dentist told me that Maven's teeth are pretty close together, which will probably remain true as she gets older.
Oh,
which
no. She's going to have the spacer thing that I had.
Well, she said, did either one of you have braces?
No.
And I said, I think my wife did. You did, right?
Yeah.
And she goes, well, she had a 50% chance of needing braces because of you. So thanks for nothing, Beth.
It just seems like braces have to be some kind of scam. Like, why do we have to do that? I don't think we have to.
I mean, have you seen my teeth? Have you seen your teeth?
My teeth are not good.
Your teeth are great.
Anyway.
Mine are not.
You know what's weird about this dentist office thing is just, it's one of those weird reminders of how adult you are because they are one of the few places that sees us all as a family unit. So
yeah.
When I come in, they're like, how's the family? And then they called me today and they were like, we couldn't get a hold of your husband. Can you tell him his appointment's canceled? And I was like,
yeah, when you texted me, I was like, I feel delinquent. I was like, I'll call you back when I have a minute. They've called me twice. They called you.
Well, they were like, he just confirmed his appointment. And we tried to tell him, it has to be rescheduled. And it was like,
I confirmed it before they rescheduled it.
Well,
don't
whatever.
Try to put this on me, dentist.
Well,
really, really
concerned.
Nice communicative dentist that treats us all really well.
I just think it's funny to realize that you're an old person with a family that you take to the dentist.
We have a family dentist. Wow. We really did it. Nailed it.
This next segment is called Do You Knows What They Said? And this is where we share some funny things our kids said.
We haven't done this segment in a while, but I'll preface this by saying that on Saturday, I spent basically the whole day with the kids. You had a lot of work to do, so you went to go work. And I decided to take them to, you'll never guess where, Smashburger. But this is at least a 16-minute walk for an adult walking alone. And we walked all the way there, and we walked all the way back, and nobody had a meltdown until we got home and we were walking up the stairs. So I call that another huge victory.
Wow. I'm impressed that you can march them around. I feel like they would somehow derail that for me.
It was the right time of day. You do it first thing.
I did take them to the playground, or I took them almost there. I can't remember. Anyway, I did take them pretty far one day.
You took them all the way to the second furthest playground from where we are?
Yeah.
Good work. And they kept saying things, and I kept writing them down. And I texted them to you. I knew you were trying to work.
But oh, my God, yeah. These were so funny.
So as we were walking, Bryn said, as we went down a side street, he goes, "Daddy, did you know that this is a shortcut?" And then Maven, without hesitating, goes, "Did you know that this is a haircut?" And then she slowly pointed to her head and went, "On my head."
She's really into mimicking, like, the last thing said. She's, like, real yes-ander with Bryn's.
Oh, yeah. Big time. But it'll be with things that her brain will be like, "Daddy, I don't think we should have this kind of treat, because you said that after if I ate all my food that we could have a treat." I'm like, "Okay, we'll do something else." And then Maven goes, "Hey, Daddy, I don't think that we should have this kind of treat, because..."
Yeah.
And she'll repeat the whole logic, and it's a question I already answered.
And she's like trying to get the words right, but she like slips up a little bit. She's like, "It's the treat."
But she's really selling the logic, like, as if she did not hear anything that was right. just said.
Always repeat back the last thing Bryn said and be like, "Oh, Mommy, we need that."
It's not like repeating in a playful way. It's repeating as if it never happened.
Yeah.
Great. So then we kept walking. I texted that to you because I thought it was so funny. And then we were passing a playground. And Bryn goes, he sees it and goes, "Daddy!" And I look at Bryn and I go, "Bryn, are you thinking what I'm thinking?" And he goes, "Yeah, about coins."
What's his logic for coins?
No idea. I literally laughed really hard, and then he just stopped talking about it, and then I texted you that. It was like a perfect pinky in the brain bit. "Pinky, are you thinking what I'm thinking? Coins?"
Oh, can I tell a story now?
Yeah.
We were doing story time last night, and I finally got them off their go-to storyline of, like, doing a dog named Poop that wants to fart or whatever. So
it's a dog
we were
named
doing
Pink, Pink.
Stories about this aliens, and Bryn was saying, like, we were having them, like, travel around to different planets, and then they left the galaxy, and then Bryn was like, "They went to the place next to space." And I was like, "What's it called?" And he was like, "Solange." He literally said Solange, and then we like kept talking, and then there was another place next to that name called Sausage, but Solange was like some like magical universe where there was like endless food.
Wow, that's incredible. I try so hard to get them to do new characters, and the more I try to set that up, the more they do the opposite. Tonight we told a story about Skeleton the Skeleton, and I said, "Maven, there's something really weird about a Skeleton the Skeleton. What's so weird about Skeleton?" And Maven goes, he moves, it goes clickety-clackety, clickety-clackety, clickety-clackety. And then Bryn goes, "No," he goes, "clickety-clack, clickety-clack." And then that became a fight.
Wait, did we talk about how Bryn was saying something about how if you had wrong information, and he was trying to define the concept of wrong information, and he said it would be wrong information to say a skeleton has no bones?
That is wrong information. That's fake news right there.
Yeah.
Skeletons have bones. It is their defining feature.
Lies.
Lies. All right, here's another thing that was said a couple blocks later. Bryn, "My shorts are itchy." Then Maven, "My shirt is itchy." And then Bryn, "Ugh, Daddy, why did you grow itchy kids?" I like that I texted that to you, and you said, "Did you explain that I grew them?" I was like, "Sorry, I Didn't
I
get to it.
I hope so. Seems relevant.
Hey, they just read the Where Did I Come From book. So they're pulling it from that, not from me.
We currently have books on birth and death in our home now.
Yeah, I read that Lifetimes book to them. And Bryn has some heavy, interesting questions.
He said the night after you read it to him, or my sister, we were picking out books and he saw that one. And he goes, I don't like this book.
Yeah. Well, he gets it.
Yeah.
Maven does not. She's like, is that aunt dead? Is it alive? Great. So then Maven, as we were walking, then she started saying out of nowhere, she had this exact phrasing. She go, okay, why is there a car in the street? And then she repeated, okay, why is there a car in the street? It's like, who do you...
She's so incessant with requests like that constantly, where she's like, why are we inside?
Both asking those questions, and they're starting to really bug me.
Why are we doing this? Why is the peanut butter on the bread? Like, what? Like...
Why is chicken in my mouth? Because you're eating it. Why am I eating it? I'm like, ugh. All right, so then here's the last one. We got into Smashburger, and Bryn goes, I think we were talking about superheroes or something, and he's like, what if I was invisible? He said, did you know that I built this Smashburger? I go, what? You did? He goes, yeah, I built this Smashburger. I was invisible when I did it. So I built it and nobody saw me and I built it. And the people saw that it was being built, but they didn't see me. So when it was done, the people said, thanks, nothing. And now it's time for Did You Knows? This is where we share something that we've read or learned recently, and we're paying it forward, passing it on.
From
you tag, you're it.
To yours. This article is from the New York Times parenting section. It's called, Is There Any Way to Emotionally Prepare for Parenthood? It's by Lindsay Hunter Lopez. And it talks about, they interviewed different experts to try to figure out what ways can you actually prepare for being a new parent for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has a list, I think, of very helpful things to focus on. It says, you know, manage your expectations, let go of idealized image of parenthood or birth, connect with your partner. It said overestimate recovery time, make sure you're getting sleep. I thought the part about getting sleep, and it also says make sure you have social support. Those are so important. Like the sleep thing, it talks about how, in this article, about how, you know, sleep deprivation can lead to postpartum depression and stuff like that. And you just can't function as a person without sleep. You need to figure out a way that you're going to get sleep.
Oh, yeah. And it's not, obviously, there's very difficult, many different difficult things of having children, but one of the most common is just that irregularity of sleep. And this does make a point of that, eliciting help from family and friends to help you specifically get the sleep you need.
Yeah.
To do the job. And that's actually something I never considered.
Well, I think that's really important. And I think, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of close family, but my sister did help with that.
Oh yeah. She nailed it. Nailed it.
We know where he gets it. The article also talked about how you should take time to see friends and pursue passions or hobbies so that you help retain a sense of your former self, which I think is something that isn't talked about enough, especially for moms. It's just, you can get so consumed by the grind of like, I have to keep this baby alive. I have to keep this baby alive. And then you just start to go insane because you're like, who am I? What is my life? Like,
well,
you know what
I mean? A big part of that is inevitable because it is a, oh, everything's,
I'm not sure I
Oops, sorry. Siri, you're not on the podcast. Because it's this, oh, your life will never be the same because it is the first time where truly, right. truly it's not about just you anymore.
And the it's because it's the first time, you don't really know if that feeling is ever going to go away because babies are so like emotionally and physically exhausting. You kind of are like, oh no, 24 hours a day for the rest of my life. What is happening? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it feels so incessant in the moment because it's hard. You can't conceptualize like months and months.
Oh yeah.
Of this happening.
I mean, for us, we also did this. We did this major life change right after we moved to the suburbs where we knew nobody, mm-hmm. and suddenly seeing people was impossible.
Right.
And I feel like...
Well, we also didn't have a lot of friends who had kids, so it's not like people knew to like reach out to us and be like, hey, let me just come over and like bring you a sandwich. You know what I mean?
Also people coming over, it's very annoying for them to like come up here.
Exactly.
So you, you have to plan
it. It's like a real... you're pulling a real favor if you ask someone to like...
I don't make people come up here.
We need to...
Unless I find a big day with big things.
Yeah. We need to, I do think this weekend of hanging out with people, it made me realize we do need to figure out a way to like host people somewhere because it's like weird to never have events. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, but it's, it's insane how quickly you forget because I'm suddenly feeling this such freedom comparatively. The fact that I can take my kids outside and we can walk around for an hour. And they're fine. And we can, and like the idea of throwing them in the car, we drove to New Jersey to visit my aunt and cousins yesterday. Mm-hmm. And it was no big deal. Like you packed a whole bag of snacks and stuff, which is great and like helpful. But I didn't need it in the end.
Well, they did eat the bananas and drink the water.
I'm not saying it was a great idea. But if I didn't have it, it would be fine. And that is a huge change from, a year ago to when Bryn was born. Where, like, you couldn't go anywhere unless you thought through all of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, that was a, like, nice thing about traveling with them on the airplane this weekend. It was just like, oh, my God, I can hand this kid an iPad and he's not, like, I'm not about to endure, like, 2 hours of potential torture.
So we both sat with both of our kids on one leg or the other. Both of them, I gave them the iPad for a while. They don't get it any other time except when they're on the plane, pretty much. And they both watched it for, an hour and a half. They got sick of it and gave it back to me. And then they drew a little bit. And, then they sort of like took a nap. There was none of that.
It was also key meltdown. That we brought stuff for them to draw with because I feel like that helped a lot. And then we brought it to the restaurant the other night when we got back. And I was like, we really need to remember to bring some kind of activity when we go out to restaurants.
Pens and a notebook is all we need now. Yeah, we took them to dinner and they didn't run away that much.
Bryn did run away to like murder some spiders.
Oh yeah, he's into killing bugs a little bit, and I'm not really concerned because I know I've killed plenty of tiny little bugs, and I also don't want to go overboard. And I know that some people are going to have different feelings about this, but I'm like, it's fine if he kills a spider.
I don't want to make like a huge thing of it.
I don't want to make a huge thing of it.
He's going to be like on a rampage.
I have been making an effort to be like, let's not kill a thing if we don't have to.
Right. Yeah.
If it's not, and then that becomes, well, when do you have to? And I'm like, if it's a spider that could bite you in your bedroom. And now he's like, there's spiders in my bedroom? I'm like, oh, no. So I've been sort of wish-washy on the rules of murder. But
the ethics of murder.
But I did say one thing that really...
Like, if you feel like having a steak, murder's okay. But...
Are we using the whole... Is it grass-fed? No. So... I told Bryn one thing where he was looking at these tiny bugs and he was trying to smash, like step on one. I'm like, Bryn, don't let him go. And then I said, Could you imagine if there a giant walked by and suddenly smacked his hand down on you and you got crushed?
Oh my God, that's terrifying.
Yeah. And Bryn really took that in. And he
so
looked
graphic.
It was not quite as intense as I just made it sound. But I spent time looking at making him look at the sky to see how big this thing was. And he left that bug alone. So I was like, I guess I traumatized you. But anyway, back to this article.
Back to this article. I mean, overall, I just love that it's sort of telling people to really take care of themselves and protect themselves. Like, the thing about telling women to overestimate recovery time, I think, is so important because our culture doesn't discuss postpartum enough, so people don't know what they're in for. And then if there's any kind of extra complications on top of that, which there often is because it's childbirth, then people are extra unprepared. So, you know what I mean? Like, people, I think it is sort of important to like set the right expectations with your workplace and your other responsibilities to be like, I will be relatively incapacitated for a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Obviously, a big part of it though is you don't really know how it's going to go for you.
No.
You know, you do your homework. You should know a lot of the technical stuff, but you can't read a book to tell you how you're going to feel. Because it's going to be, I think it's helpful to hear what other people's experiences have been, so you don't feel like when you're having these feelings that there's something wrong with you. But even if you have a wide perspective of different experiences, your journey is going to be your own.
Yeah. But I think I like that this article is sort of like telling you to have a general awareness of these things because you don't know what you're in for, and it gets, I think in the public imagination, it gets really downplayed, the kinds of the issues people are dealing with in postpartum. Then people feel like something's wrong with them, like you said. They're like, why am I not handling this as well as other people seem to be? Mm-hmm. And then that perpetuates the problem because they don't get help for mental or physical problems they're experiencing. And then the recovery time is even more drawn out. You know what I mean? So you really need to get yourself checked in on by your medical professionals or your family or whoever.
Ask for help.
Yeah. I do think you should let people know, like, this is going to be really hard and I'm not going to want to ask for help when I'm in it. I feel like a lot of us, when you're overwhelmed, you're not really in a good place to reach out for help. So you, like, it's not a bad idea to have people remind people to check in on you. And I think for women to remind their spouses to be checking in.
I was just going to say spouses, I can speaking for myself as the husband in this, that I think for a lot of guys, and not just guys, but this is a stereotypical thing of, you know, who are very just like, just tell me what to do and I'll do that.
Well,
as opposed
men,
to like,
men are statistically,
they might not be able to tell you what they need and want. And so you have to be proactive and to keep your mind open that there might be needs that are here that I'm not going to be given an A to B instruction on.
Well, and women are programmed from a very young age to check in on each other. And like, they're told they're responsible for the emotional needs of the people around them. And men are not taught that. So men are not necessarily always as tuned in to those kinds of issues. So
yeah, and you know, we've had plenty of those arguments, and I've some of my friends too, of that, like, just tell me what you want. That's the emotional
and it's
labor.
Like, I want you to be paying attention to me day to day, not when, at the point I'm boiling with anger.
And some of these things, can you just solve them before I have to tell you how to solve them? But
okay.
We're all learning. We all figure stuff out. Communicate.
Yeah. But I think I think we've talked about this before, but I think men need to sort of step up their game in a lot of ways and understand the seriousness of the task at hand of keeping a baby alive and recovering from, you know, massive internal bleeding. And
I don't know why I just laughed at massive internal bleeding.
I mean, it's the reality. You're bleeding for 6 weeks from an internal wound that where a baby was attached to your body. So then, but women need to also like try to rewire our cultural expectation, which is that like we are supposed to not need any help and just figure it out on our own and be perfect mothers intuitively all the time. And we need to get over that and realize it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to demand better treatment from your spouse.
And to admit that you don't know what you need, you know, I think.
Yeah, I think it's sometimes you just need to be like, I feel horrible. I don't know if it's hormones or sleep deprivation or whatever, but I need someone to help me right now. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Can I, this is a real tangent, but last night you asked me to put my elbows into your back and I didn't do it. And I just want you to know that I feel guilty about it.
I'm glad because you refusing to give massages is one of the real points of contention in our relationship.
How often do I refuse?
Well, I don't ask very often because you never will give a massage.
That's not true. I almost always say yes. I will go, ugh.
You give a massage like once a year.
That's not true. You asked me to
once
do things.
Every 6 months.
If you ever ask me to do it, I almost always do it. Because I'm great.
I disagree.
Well, oh boy. Here's a question. How many of you out there have a spouse who will be laying in bed for an hour plus, and then you come into the room and you lay down, and then 5 seconds later they say, will you give me a glass of water? And then you will pop up and go get them a glass of water.
Oh my God. This person sounds like a nightmare to live with. How do you handle it?
But think of that like every night for your whole marriage.
Well, you know.
What would you do? Listen.
I think what I would do in that situation is I would learn that when I get up to go to bed and I'm heading to the bathroom, I go get a glass of water and bring it to my wife.
Have you noticed that I do that sometimes? Sometimes.
You did that like once.
What would you, I'm just, I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that because
I love water. Water is good for you.
It's the like, hey, will you go do a thing that I am perfectly capable of doing, but
I'm
just don't want to get up.
I'm tired in bed. I'm about to drift off. I don't want to get up.
It's, what would you do if I did that to you? Would you go get me a glass of water?
If I'm standing? Yeah.
No, after you've laid down. Ugh. Would you do it? I never have, and I probably never will ask you to do this, but would you do it?
I do so many things for you all the time.
Sure, but it's never get me a glass of water.
Because you don't want a glass of water. And I do give you a glass of water sometimes because you don't know how to drink water.
You give me water when I don't ask for it.
When you're like, I'm cranky and tired and look how red my face is on this hot, hot day.
But specifically,
what could the reason be why I'm so tired?
If I'm laying in bed, you come and lay down, and then 10 seconds later, I say, will you give me a glass of water? Would you do it?
Oh, my God. Yes.
Okay, I'm going to do it one time in our whole relationship, and I'm going to save it.
Okay.
First, I don't know when. Just because I promised for no reason on this podcast.
Wow, okay.
I'll get you water. I will get you water, Beth.
And then you
whenever you ask
up.
Me for a glass of water, I will get it. And secret, even though I'm sort of like complaining about it, it really weirdly makes me happy to get you water.
If anyone listening thinks it sounds like a serious issue that I ask my husband to get me a glass of water, please write in and let me know how unreasonable
I was trying to end this on a positive note, saying that I like doing things for you. But I will take this to a competitive place if you want to.
No, I don't want to continue talking about this ever again. Hey, don't send us any emails about the glass of water.
Hey, Beth, will you get me a glass of water?
This next segment is called Listeners Want to Knows. It's where we take questions and comments from you guys.
All right, let's get into it. Hey guys, I love you. I'm 23 and I have gone through baby fever approximately 24 times within the last 6 years, the duration of my relationship with my high school sweetheart. I'm also a total research freak, so I've been listening to your podcast for nearly a year now. I'm probably still a ways from having my own kids, but I want to be prepared as possible. So a few questions. First, how do I impress upon my boyfriend the importance of research before having kids? Reading the books, listening to podcasts, and blah, blah, blah. No, I'm sure he'll come around once reality settles in. Hopefully. Got any spells, Beth? Just kidding. You're not quit. You're not kidding. Real question. We can hit both these. Real question.
Wait, let's deal with this.
Okay. We sort of just talked about this, but.
Okay. Well, first of all, I just want to say her talking about having baby fever at 23 is like so true to my experience, where I hit somewhere around that age and all of a sudden I was just filled with like animalistic desire for a baby. Like,
really?
I've always loved babies, but I hit a certain age where I would just find myself staring at people's babies on the subway, like so in love. Like, I would just like, I don't know.
I don't think I knew this about you. I mean, you babysat and you fell in love with certain babies.
No, but this is when I was having like sort of career transition issues, not liking my jobs. And this is when I was like, oh, I'm going to babysit and get this out of my system. And it really did get it out of my system, because if you spend a few hours with a kid, you're like, yeah, I'm good. I don't need to like have that at home all the time. You know what I mean? Kids are so exhausting.
That's what I feel when I hang out with dogs.
But I loved being with those kids when I babysat. They were like so fun. But anyway, her question, how does she prepare her boyfriend? Yeah, I guess we did just talk about this. But I like what she asked about spells, because I do kind of want to give her
I knew you'd like
some
that.
Advice I've received from my spiritual
witches?
Advisor is that you picture the person in your relationship doing the thing you want them to do, or like behaving in a pleasing way, and then you start manifesting that because you're interacting with that person in a way that implies that they are up to the task at hand.
Ooh.
And it doesn't doubt them on fulfilling that. Do you know what I mean?
You know what? I can totally get behind that, because I can feel when I'm with somebody, when I think that they have already decided that I'm going to fail them or that I'm not capable of this,
yeah.
I can feel that energy from them. And boy, it's more likely to become true, because I don't.
Well, you and I used to get in a lot of fights because you would do something that really set me off, because it had happened like 10 or more times. And I would be like, you always do this. And then you would get mad because you were like, you're painting me as someone who always is bad or doing this thing. And I was like, but you are. But it really, when I was so focused on that, what had happened, even if it had happened many times, it was like kind of manifesting the continual repetition of that event.
Yeah.
Instead of me being like, I don't like what is currently happening and I need it to change.
Yeah. Well, I spent all my energy. If no one is ever going to respond to somebody saying you always, because even if it's a lie, if it's a pattern, it's not true. And I'm going to spend the time defending myself on that. But if we can actually, I mean, that's a different thing. Talk about the actual instance.
So,
but yeah,
her question.
Somebody as if they're capable of it, and they form. You're not dealing with all the defensive bullshit.
Can we talk about what's her next question?
The real question that I really came here for is, how do you guys deal with swearing? Do you guys swear around your kids? Do other people? How do you feel about it? Do you talk about it with Brandon Maven? As a child, I knew adults swore and kind of learned to gauge the severity, sincerity, tone of a conversation by how many swear words were used and which ones. For example, F word meant someone was very upset. Growing up, I've learned that they are often used for emphasis, but I also have met people who are vehement about not ever swearing in front of their kids. Alternatively, I have heard, I believe it was from Dax Shepard, that some people allow their kids to hear swearing and even swear themselves, with the condition that the severity of the words be respected and that the words themselves be used correctly. I'd love to know what you guys, if you've already dealt with this, And your individual thoughts on these questions. Sending you all love, hugs, and whatever Peter, and whether Peter likes it or not, all the happy and joyous vibes. Insert maniacal spiritual laughter here. Licia? I'm fine with vibes.
You're fine with vibes?
Yeah.
Thank you, because I'm sending them.
I am receiving them.
Okay, anyway, her question.
So how do we handle swearing with our kids?
So, I like some of her points. I will say largely we don't swear because we weren't raised in swearing households, so it doesn't flow off the tongue as often. But
true.
This weekend when we were hanging out with them amongst people, I realized I was more inclined to swear because I was trying to communicate information to, you know what I mean? Like,
clean that shit off that shitty table.
Well, yeah. That I'm talking about the part of the vacation where I was telling everyone to clean up.
And insulting Chuck's table.
No, I mean, but I was, like, there's certain issues you'll be discussing where just occasionally it feels like for emphasis you will swear to, like, get your point across. And I don't, even in those cases, I don't swear super often. But I don't think I like what this listener was saying about this idea that if you're teaching kids to use them properly, there is maybe a place for swearing.
Well, one, I just realized that we just talked about how much we love Chuck, and we didn't. I just need to mention that Chuck's a wonderful wife, Emily, was also our host and is an incredible human being and took care of us as well. So, Emily, we love you too. Your whole family is beautiful.
They made us ice cream.
Oh, twice.
In an ice cream machine.
It really was so wonderful. Bryn, he knows, like, some friend told him all the swear words, and he told me that he learned them, and he knows that they're bad. And I flash back to those types of conversations in elementary school where you talk about swear words, and the intensity in which you secretly tell your friends tells you immediately that these are dangerous words and you don't tell people. So, like, it's like the mythology, like the weight and the mystery around them makes it clear that they're powerful. But Bryn, two things. Bryn has become the swear word police, but he'll do it with, now anytime I say dumb or stupid, which you don't say in schools in any context anymore. And I was like, this is a dumb, I don't know, like a toy or a, no, not even that. It's like, what's the most harmless way you could use the word dumb? Not talking about a person.
Yeah, you were like, that's a dumb show or something.
I was like, this thing is put together. This is stupid. And he goes, Daddy said a bad word. And I have to keep, and I have to validate it.
He's always calling our friends out on that when they're like, oh, this dumb thing or this stupid. And he's like, that's a bad word. Like,
yeah. But also in the last 15 years working for Story Pirates, my language has changed a ton. I'll still say shit. Fuck. I was going to say the F word and the S word, but, you know, this is an explicit podcast. I'll say them. But I've removed things like that sucks or oh my God, which, you know, because we're performing in schools and we don't say, and I don't say dumb and I don't call people stupid, no like body image stuff. And that's, so like I speak better in general than I ever did growing up. Like I don't say shut up. I mean, I'm an adult. I don't call anyone to shut up.
Who just casually says, hey, shut up?
Shut up. Beth, shut up.
Like, if you're just throwing that out there.
I'm just thinking about my childhood. It was just nothing but my brothers and I just screaming, shut up.
Shut up is such a weird, like, 90s thing to me. Maybe it's from much longer than that, but it feels, like, so specific to childhood. Just nonstop saying, shut up.
Shut up. Shut up. This sucks.
I wish we had pizza.
Oh, this sucks.
I'm going to get on my skateboard.
Oh, shut up. It does feel good. we're not going to be too uptight about it, but, you know, it's like we tolerate certain things. Like, they talk about farts all the time, and every once in a while I have to say, okay, we've hit the fart quota. And I have to explain, you know, you're out, you don't say this when you're out and about because it's rude. There's another thing that happened on our walk is that Bryn, as we were walking down the street, looked at me and goes, Daddy, I farted again. And this guy from his car window just immediately goes, you farted again? He's looking, he's smiling at me, and I go, this kid's really proud.
Well, okay, one last thing I want to say about swears is I think part of why I don't love, like, swearing all the time is because it feels like you're communicating anger through swearing usually. Like, it's when you're using it, it's like adding emotion to something. And I think a degree of that is healthy. Like, there's things that people should express anger over.
Uh-huh.
But to just constantly do that is like a weird... I don't know.
Yeah, there's versions of it that feel very, you have something to prove. There's versions of it where you're, it's filler and you're not being as succinct or articulate as you could be.
Well, I mean, there's definitely certain words that we could just like reclaim and be like, they're not, this is not a swear anymore. You know what I mean?
We can decide that?
I don't know. Collectively, we as humans, like, there's plenty of words people say on TV now all the time that would have been considered swear words 50 years ago.
Shut up.
This has been We Knows Parenting. If you want to hear more from us, check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at We Knows Pod. If you'd like to submit a question, share a story, give some advice, or parenting hypothetical for the Would You Know segment, you can email us at weknowspod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 347-384-7396.
As always, why not leave us a review, write one up, give us a rating, and
subscribe,
all of the good stuff. And it's so nice to be back talking to you, our fine
friends. We missed
friends.
You guys.
We'll see you next week. Good bye.